As we finally reach the last scroll of the Iliad, scroll 24, we come to a point where the hero of the Iliad has done a lot of learning. If we go all the way back to scroll 1, he was worried about his ego, about his status in society, about the fact that his honor was damaged. By the time we got to scroll 9, he was worried about his life, how he was going to lose his life. But he was ready to make a priority. He was ready to prioritize the epic that would preserve him and his honor and his glory forever over his own life. But still he dies hard. He doesn't want to lose his life. He's saying to himself, I have just one psyche, one life to lose, damn it. But he makes the decision. Then by the time we get to scroll 18, he actually experiences that death by experiencing the sorrow that he feels over the death of the one who is nearest and dearest to him, Patroclus. He gets to experience vicariously his own death and even the grief for his own death. By now, the value of a life is a harder and harder and harder thing to define. And then, to come full circle, by the time we get to scroll 24, he gets to see still another way of looking at the value of human life, because he actually begins to feel sympathetic, empathetic with the father of his deadliest enemy, Priam, the father of Hector. Here is the father of a man who killed his nearest and dearest friend. The father is offering apoina, which we translate as compensation, to the Iliad's greatest hero. Compensation for the body of Hector. The old man thinks that the compensation is simply a way of buying the corpse of his son so that he can give that son's body a proper funeral and thereby ensure the son's immortalization. So it really is about life, but as far as Achilles is concerned, what is really at stake? He is learning that even the life of his deadliest enemy is worth the world to the father of that deadliest enemy. And when he sees the father of Hector break down in tears and weep over his son, he makes the ultimate human connection. He's reasoning to himself, well, if my father were here, and if I were the one who was dead, then the sorrow would be for me. And he begins to empathize. Let me say that again. As he sees Priam weeping, he is thinking to himself, that old man could be my father. The corpse that he is mourning could be my corpse. And suddenly Achilles starts to make an identification, to identify with the person he hates more than anybody in the whole world. This becomes the ultimate lesson in the value of human life, where Achilles starts understanding that value even in terms of somebody whom he would least want to understand and hates to understand. As we see this progression in the thinking and feeling of the hero, from the ego and honor problems of scroll 1, to the problems of one's own life and death in scroll 9, to the problem of actually feeling the grief of one's own death in scroll 18, and finally to the problem of feeling even the sorrow over the death of one's deadliest enemy in scroll 24, we start to understand what is really going on in that process that was the litigation in the Shield of Achilles. If we now read for the defendant, Agamemnon, and if we read for the plaintiff, Achilles, then who is the dead man? Well, in one sense, it's Patroclus. But in another sense, as we think of the progression of the values of Achilles, it's perhaps Achilles himself. When we see the big picture of the shield of Achilles, we start coming to terms with the shift in the values of the hero as he lives through the experiences of the entire Iliad. We see him essentially going from a plaintiff who is suing over the death of Patroclus to a defendant who has to defend his own self over the death of Patroclus. Look what I've done. I've caused the death of my own nearest and dearest companion because I let my companions down. And then finally, this is the ultimate surprise, to the victim. Achilles, in a sense, if we look at him through the lens of the shield passage in Scroll 18, goes from plaintiff to defendant to victim. And in that sense, the dead man whose life is being weighed, is being evaluated, is Achilles himself. I have written in the essay about the shield that I have shared with you in the dialogue the following about the important questions that are posed by the shield. As I said, the question is, what happens when the story of the Iliad draws to a close? Once that happens, the figures inside the Iliad become frozen into their actions by the finality of what has been narrated. This freezing is completed once all is said and done, at the precise moment when the whole story has been told for us, the end of Scroll 24 of the Iliad. This moment, which is purely notional from the standpoint of Iliadic composition, gets captured by the frozen motion picture of the shield. Time has now stopped still, and the open-endedness of contemplating the artistic creation can begin. This is what Lessing was thinking about in his essay that dealt so powerfully with the Shield of Achilles. To repeat, in the long run, Achilles can be a defendant as well as a plaintiff in a litigation over the death of Patroclus. Because in a sense, he caused it. He is not only the aggrieved party, he is also the defendant who blames himself. In the longest run, though, Achilles can even be the victim. The victim, since the Iliad makes his own death a direct consequence of the death of Patroclus. And we can illustrate this even by way of words. Back in Iliad 1, Achilles and all the other characters are obsessing about apoena, ransom, compensation for some wrong committed against somebody. In Iliad Scroll 9, Ajax, the friend of Achilles, is obsessing about a compensation that is offered to somebody who's lost his nearest and dearest. Remember how he's obsessing about how Achilles is refusing to accept compensation even for the loss of a girl? Well, there the word that is being used is poine, which is more appropriate to a real litigation in a real peacetime situation when people settle their differences by way of juridical process rather than wartime activity. And then, finally, we see the obsession in Scroll 18, where Achilles understands the full pain, the full grief of his own death. And only in this context can we start understanding the broadest aspects, the broadest limits of the humanism involved in the Iliad. Because in a sense, the Iliad never calls the shots about what's right or wrong. It lets the overall narration help all of us decide what is right or wrong. that inner circle of elders who compete about what is the best and most righteous and most just formulation about the rights and wrongs, about the death of a person, about the value of a life. That inner circle of elders is surrounded by an outer circle of onlookers, of people in general, like you and me, who are having their own debate about whether the inner circle of experts in law have it right about who is in the right and who is in the wrong. And in a sense, if we extend the circle even further out to include us, the immediate audience, the readers of the Iliad as we have it survived to us, isn't it true that in a sense we too have a chance to judge one more time about the rights and wrongs and about the true value of life? I write in my essay, quoting Lynn George, "The process is a desire for a finality that is infinitely deferred." And I add to that, in the end, the logic of the litigation scene spills over, paradoxically, into the logic of an ever-expanding outermost circle, that is, the people who are about to hear the Iliad. These people, I argue, are to become ultimately the people of the city, the population of Greek civilization. The logic of the litigation scene spills over into the logic of the surrounding circle of supposedly impartial elder adjudicators who are supposed to define the rights and wrongs of the case. Next, the logic of this inner circle of elders spills over into the logic of an outer circle of people who surround the elders, the people who will define who defines most justly. Next, it spills over into the logic of the outermost circle, people who are about to hear the Iliad. To repeat, those people who hear Homeric poetry are to become the people of the polis, the people of Greek civilization, but ultimately for us, these people are even ourselves.